Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, gang, and we welcome you back into the barbershop, where it's going to be me and Alfred with Kim on the ones and twos, going to be digging into sociopathy, and we're going to be kicking these thoughts around. Alfred's going to be on parenting, and actually, after some recent events, I'll be talking a little bit about parenting. We're talking about running a calorie deficit. And then we're going to be doing overrated, underrated, aren't we new, fresh, and original? And of course, we're going to have the open floor. Bring in a fresh topic. Got an idea? Call in. That's 310-982-4273. And this is brought to you by Black Freethinkers. I mean, who else is going to bring it to you? Bring it live and direct. You will love this, and we're going to have a good time. It's the Barbershop.
What's going on? What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? It is I, Mr. Mims, Dragnet, whatever you want to call me. It's cool. I'm going to give you something a little interesting today. A little bit of piece of health and fitness, a little bit of piece of sociopathy. I don't know if some of you have heard of that, but we're going to really get into it today. So I'm going to hand it back over to Allie. He's going to really get into it. Let us begin.
All right, gang. All right, here we go. Now, my niece probably heard me speak on her on earlier shows. If you haven't heard Black Freethinkers yet, I am I'm an uncle, a functioning domestic uncle, doing the best I can as an adult around the kid. And my niece is a young black woman who's transitioning from elementary school to middle school. And she's changed from a predominantly black nerd social circles to a predominantly white Hispanic urbanized circles. And some of the subjects in this newer crowd, they seem to be a more interesting bunch. You know, they're fun kids. They get into a bit more trouble. They have the trendy clothing and social networking accounts. They're on Facebook. They're awesome, right? And you know, she's financially a fairly spoiled only child when it comes to money spent. You know, three adults, three adult incomes, that you can kind of spoil a kid inadvertently sometimes. And we spend a lot in the house to make her more comfortable, so she has all the same cool stuff like these new kids in the middle school. And it's kind of natural to fall into that crowd. You have the expensive cool things, so do I. Let's be friends. And she's kind of aware that these kids, they tend to project verbal lashings on other students, including some of her former classmates, some of the old kids that have fallen by the nerd side. And Monday afternoon this week, just yesterday, I leave work. I pick up some plums, take them home, and wash them with some other fruits, have them set out in a bowl for when she gets home from school. And I get a message from Kim with some links so I can open them up in separate tabs and get ready to start drawing out a monologue and putting a narrative together for the show. And, you know, I go in the bathroom, get showered up, get cleaned up for the evening, and come out, and I notice the house is way quiet. And I go downstairs. What's going on here? My brother-in-law is in the kitchen asking me, where is she? I'm like, and now, you know, adults, we're freaking out. Here we go. So we start making the phone calls, you know, looking in the caller ID, calling her friends' telephone numbers. And we even have to call her mother. Her mother has to leave work early. And they go out looking for her, of course, you know, the friends' houses that they're familiar with. And an anonymous caller called my brother-in-law's cell phone number a few times while they're driving around saying, she's okay. Now, me, I'm brutally logical, you know, like I just think the worst, you know. My first thought immediately is just drugged up, you know, sexually assaulted, and we'll find the body later. And I know a lot of people don't want to think that. That's the worst thought. Makes your eyes water up. But that's the reality of our species. Human beings do this. You know, you can't be too surprised by it now. It's 2013, been doing it for a long time. So they can't find her at any of her friends' homes. So, of course, next step, call the cops. And the cops find her at the house of one of these new friends. And they bring her back, and her mother's trying to talk to her as calm as she can. You know, it's a crazy situation. And we know, so, you know, she has her hood on her head, you know, like a, you know, like a hooded sweatshirt, you know, a zip up. And, you know, like, what's going on here? She finally pulls the hood off her head, and half of her full head of natural black hair is cut down to the scalp in patches, you know, like down to that skin, patches, cut down, whole half of the head. And her mother immediately freaks, you know, she can't handle it. And as I said, I'm always ready for the tragedy. Bang, let's go. Take her upstairs and just immediately just start shooting the shit. Just start talking and kicking the real shit. You know, like, I didn't hold back. I just started kicking the shit. And I was like, look, you're a black woman in America. Now, she you know, she's barely 12 years old yet, but I got to, you know, got to put it down like this. You're a black woman in America. And this kid that got you to do this to yourself, she's not acting specifically on this as an individual, but this young white Hispanic kid is part of a social construct that was meant to keep you at the bottom from the beginning of what we call this nation. And she told you out of her mouth that it would be pretty if you cut half your head off. And now, considering that you are already one of the pretty people, not just being biased here, you're just one of the pretty people. And a pretty person is just going to be a pretty person. If you have nice clothes, accessories, a nice backpack, and a full head of natural hair, and you don't want to ruin it with chemicals, that's just an extra plus. So I could see some jealousy on this kid as an individual, even though what she did acted within the social construct, because that cuts down on your prettiness, you know, because that your face and your hair, that grooming, that's the first thing people see, you know, first thing people judge on. So what this kid did was just kind of attempt to socially decimate you, because as a black woman in this westernized kind of fake European culture we built here, that's just just hopped up on wacky pills, you're supposed to be ugly, or you're supposed to be pretty how they want you to be pretty, you know, with your hair chemically processed or hot combed the way they want it to be. So it was her intent to make you ugly. And again, she didn't invent this. This kid was just acting within the system that was put into place generations ahead of us. So now what's the plan? What's going to happen next? Well, this kid was going to have you go to school tomorrow morning and just brutally humiliate you, to utterly destroy you in front of the other children. Now, what does this further do? Let's see. What is school? School can be your pathway to your money. All right, you get your education, you get out, and you get a gig. That's like the main idea. That's the steps, right? You know, I hate to make it sound so simple. There's other ways to acquire currency, but that is a pretty decent, solid path that can work. But you need to get this money. But if you're mentally broken down when you're supposed to be focused in school, you're so socially destroyed that you can't handle showing your face with half your head of hair in that building, well, that's an obstruction of your path to your money. So what this kid did, acting within the construct, successfully put another black woman in her place. And that's the fabric of America. And like we said on the Sunday show, there are people that don't want us to talk about this. You know, there are people that will join the discussion just to say that they don't think the discussion should be happening, you know, even though they weren't invited or forced to engage the discussion. But we will talk about it, and you will deal with it. All right, now yeah, as I keep saying, this girl is a part of the social construct here. And as an individual, this girl she'll increase her social stock with this act of cruelty that'll be added to her credentials as an individual within that school. And she did this apathetically, without consideration, and seeing a fellow human being is just a personal stepping stone to brutally dig her cleats into, kind of like a sociopath. we've created something with our special money that we were talking about with the school to college to career. And we've created something where we celebrate one individual human being consuming and hoarding a mass amount of this resource that we call money, as if this one individual living one life could possibly need so much. Now, I could understand if one person worked a job for 60 hours to another person working the exact same job for 40 hours, then that person could acquire some more of this precious money to beef up on two sandwiches instead of one, because maybe that's what that person wants to do. But we can't keep pretending it's not weird when one guy can work 10 hours and have 1,000 sandwiches, of the 800s of which he won't even consume, and we'll have 300 other people only have half a sandwich for 30 hours of work. Now, in this system, it's a great place for a sociopath to take advantage and misuse this invention, this precious money and economy that we've invented as a species. And we love these people. We write articles about them. We follow them around in reality shows. We've normalized this sociopathy and while we watch the world burn. And there was something else that I saw that I was thinking about the word work. And I also want to get into that book, The Sociopath Next Door, later on. Kim put me up on this book. I'm going to talk about that. Now, I work. You know, we're dealing with the word work here. I work for a business that does not help the species, the environment, or the ecosystem. Like, really, it does not need to exist. And the only reason why I work is to get some of this precious money, and, you know, so the guys at the top can have a whole lot more of that precious money. But wouldn't it be better if I worked tending to a garden for my work? And maybe get to take home some of the food from that garden instead of money that I would just use to go to another garden and buy food. It seems kind of silly. And maybe somebody else could have work distributing that food to, you know, elderly folks that can't walk to the garden, or disabled folks that can't walk to the garden or get there themselves. Yeah, that's those are my wacky ideas there. Now there's the Milgram experiment on sociopathy. It's an experiment on obedience to authority figures, and it was a series of notable social psychology experiments conducted by the Yale University psychologist Stanley Milgram, it's named after him, which measured the willingness of study participants to obey an authority figure who instructed them to perform acts that conflicted with their personal conscience. All right, so, you know, do you want to do a job that you feel is morally wrong because the authority figure told you to? And say the authority figure is the person who writes that precious check with that precious money. Are you willing to do that job? This is what this experiment is on. And the experiments were controversial. They were considered by some other scientists to be unethical and physically or psychologically abusive. In one version of the experiment, the receiver of this shock, it's a shock therapy experiment, and he was sure to mention that the participant had a heart condition. Of course, this is fake. The person administering the shocks, they don't know that this person does not actually have a heart condition. You just tell them that to up the ante on the experiment. Now, what I'm seeing in the Milgram experiment is that he conducted the study with participants involving electroshock, all right? And he took a position of authority, telling the person administering the shocks not to stop until the person being shocked was learning specific word combinations that they were supposed to memorize while knowing this person had a heart condition. And he found that the person giving the shocks was more concerned with following authority than with the safety of the person that they were shocking. It was a follow-up on this study by another scientist shortly after that found that 60 to 61% of the subjects were willing to deliver fatal voltages, right, if they were told by an authority figure. So yes, our culture is a playground for sociopathy. Now, it gets funkier. In 2008, in Santa Clara University, now this is a holy shit one right here for me now. In the Santa Clara studies, they found that people who were giving the shocks, but they quit before the experiment ended because they had that as a participant, they could quit. When they did, they blamed themselves for causing the pain. And they were like, no, I'm the one doing this. I'm pressing the button, and I'm harming someone, and I got to stop doing this. It isn't worth this job or this authority. But there were people who didn't quit, too. And they found that the people who continued, they blamed the instructor who told them to keep going. Even though they had the option to quit, they blamed the instructor. Now, remember back in, I think it was about January 9th or 10th, that bald gun guy, James Yeager, who got on YouTube and he was talking about the government taking his guns away. He said, I'm going to start killing people. Well, he was threatening to administer a fatal shock and blaming it on the people that he sees as the authority. Like, I'd love for them to, you know, throw this guy in the study. I mean, Jesus Christ, I feel like I'm getting confirmation bias with the existence of this man. So, yeah, at the end of that, what I think is, instead of working in some corporate grocery store, that same land and that building and that parking lot, that could be used just for gardening and farming. And instead of working cash registers or making donuts, people could go to work tending to fresh produce and cattle and chickens and pigs, and we could do a lot better. But that's the crazy hippie in me. And I just wanted to open up the show with that sociopathy. Alfred, how you doing there?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm still kind of just reeling here from that story about your niece, but at the same time, I can attest to some of just the pure nastiness of especially adolescents and pre-adolescents. It's really, really telling as to how they're being raised and as to what they're being taught. And I think that has a lot to do with it, because that age, you know, they've been sponges for so many years that they're going to start reflecting. They're going to start, you know, once the sponge gets so big, it's going to start letting off some of that extra moisture. So you can only imagine what that child was taught and how that child has been viewing just, you know, especially a young, pretty young lady like you're saying, like your niece, especially when she doesn't fit that stereotype, you know, loud, obnoxious, ghetto. She had to put her back down there so she could fit that stereotype, knock her down a few pegs. And I've been personally in that situation, too, where if I had a little bit too much self-esteem, I've been put in my place, too, except it was with fists and feet and you know, bad words. But it's really, really interesting. And that's something that I want to talk a little bit about, too, in my piece with, you know, sexual parenting and parenting, is that you really don't realize all these factors that you have, especially in raising children, whether you do it purposely or not. But then again, you have to look at different things. What can you name anything on TV that displays anyone of African American, Jamaican, anyone fairly dark skin or brown skin? Can you name any show that displays them positively now as child, adolescents, young adult, or elderly? Can you name, you know, something personal?
Wait. Can you say that one again? That was breaking up a little bit. You said on television?
On television, can you name, like, a show where you have African-Americans that are actually displayed positively, you know, kind of the breaking the mold, breaking the stereotypes sort of, model?
I think I can't see it without it being in comedy. Like it's never something just casual. I don't want to say drama. I guess kind of like light drama, but it always has to be something really funny. Like Terry Crews can play a great dad, but he also has to be hilarious and pop locking. Like he can't just be a casual normal great dad, or even, you know, take it further back in what, late 80s, early 90s, I think it went into 97, you know, Carl Winslow's character on the Stever Family Matters.
Yeah.
You know, like he still yelled and flipped out and gave himself a heart attack, you know, and didn't eat right. You know, like even though he was a decent dad, he still, you know, wasn't really completely full circle role model. You know, like even, you know, just this afternoon when I put my key in the door, you know, I could hear the music through the door, and it was who was that? You know, one of those R&B singers that was dating Little Bow Wow or something back in the early 2000s. Sierra. You know, yeah, and I just walked in, and this is, you know, I'm kind of building a new narrative domestically here. And as far as television, entertainment, all right, but let's devote most of it to getting useful information. So I just walked in the living room, I pointed at the TV, and I said, "That is not useful information." And she nodded her head, and she was like, "Yeah," and she turned it to channel 26, which is, you know, it's the news. You know, watch the pundits yell at each other. You know, watch that. You know, here's some new words that you might want to look up. You know, I always recommend them. You know, I pay a cable bill that would make a lot of people, their faces would explode, but I pay it so I have access to a lot of channels. So, you know, you can go on the on-demand ones like Showtime On Demand, HBO, and watch documentaries. You know, watch that documentary on fracking. You know, get useful information. You know, and if you can't find any black people for it, you know, like, you know, I mean, you know, you'll just have to get the useful information from white people, or like, you know, before the show started, talking to Kim, you know, like, we got to get, you know, she's getting with a, I don't know the specific word, therapist, psychotherapist, psychoanalyst, somebody who is a professional that can probably do it better than me. But I would also just like to give her the telephone and see if Dr. Fonza could give her like 30 minutes of just time to just talk. I feel like she just needs good dialogue for the most part with smart adults. And, of course, yeah, there's going to be a bit of an ideological bias with me. I think an atheist black woman is probably going to be the best person to talk to. That's not going to try to take advantage of anybody. I just feel like in this social construct that we're in, an atheist black woman is the one that you can trust the most.
Yeah, and you really bring up a good point. You know, notice how much you really have to pay in order to get some really good information. I mean, Netflix has a good documentaries here and there, but their content isn't very stable, I guess I could say that. But you bring up a really good point, and I wish I could find the article on the effects of public broadcast television that has on young black boys. And it was very telling as to how they perceive themselves and how they perceive themselves when they got older, because they have nothing to look forward to other than, well, I can tell you right now, you turn to BET, you're just going to find shuck and jive and reinforced stereotypes left and right. And so you see that shit, and then they, okay, well, when I go to college, okay, well, you have College Hill. You know, you have something, and I for the life of me, I tried to watch that back when I did watch BET, and something in me just revolted immediately and said, this is nonsense. This is, they're doing the same shit. Every episode, for one thing, is boring. And the one intelligent guy there is the one who's at the bottom of the totem pole, the only one who might actually graduate, who might actually, you know, do good in his life, because he thinks outside the box and he's not one of them. He is the one that's getting the short end of the stick. You know, he's the one at the end of all the comments and everything. So what positive things are there out there to really reinforce this image that you want to project and this image that you want to get away from? And that's what really bothers me. And especially, this is my condolences to your niece, but I really hope she doesn't become too jaded after an experience like that, because something like that, once, you know, it dawned on her what was really going on, because, you know, at first she was innocent and, you know, you're young, you're gullible, and you go through life, and you have experiences, and some people take them and go, well, you know, that was silly, ha-ha, you know, I learned from that. And some people go, well, you know what, 10-20 years from now, I'm gonna fucking get that person.
they're
gonna be bankrupt. They're gonna be homeless. I'm gonna do something. So that's the flip side of that, I guess, would be. But at, even in that scenario, that's motivation. It might not be the best, but that is still motivation to really see what's going on. But I could probably play devil's advocate on the side and say, well, how do you know that that girl had that intent to degrade her as a black woman? Maybe she just wanted to play a silly little joke, because all kids play silly little jokes, which, kids don't play jokes like that. That is just cruelty on a massive scale. That is premeditated public humiliation. That takes some cunning. That takes some thought. That takes some real, I don't even have a word for it right now, and I have a pretty good vocabulary. That's completely, what's the word? Oh, skullduggery. There you go. That's your new word of the day, man, skullduggery.
And she was, trying to, because we didn't get her home until after 10 p.m. last night. And so she was trying to get her to stay at her house with her so she could take her to school with her that morning. So, I mean, really, the humiliation would have started on the school bus. Now, are you even going to go into the building, or are you just going to go run out into the street crying and get hit by a car? You know, like, this is very a very disgusting child. And I don't know where the kid's parents' house is, so it's really it's up to my sister if we're going to go confront the parents, because I think that we need to go talk to the parents and because I doubt that they'll care, you know, because I'll just say it right here on the show and probably make some people mad. I have no faith in a lot of white Hispanics in the state of Florida. I live here. I've been here for 8 years. I watch the behavior. I'm cynical about it. But to be able to say to them, you are raising a disgusting, insane little child, and that represents you. What does it say about you that this is what you're raising and this is what your child would do to another child? Just that, those simple little words, and then walk away from the doorstep. You know, because it's got to be some sort of mental thing to get that weight off your shoulders to say it to the person you need to say it to, instead of just stomping around your living room saying it to yourself. That's not going to help you much. That you were talking about that the TV effect on black men and boys. Was that from something called opportunityagenda.org?
I believe so.
Let me see. Let me click on this and see what comes up in this article. Folks, lean in with me while I scroll down. Oh, no, this is just a book salesman site. They're slick. They're very slick. They almost got me. Let me dig into this one, sociopathic behavior link that Kim sent me. It's an introduction to sociopathy. And it was two specific paragraphs that really hit hard out of this thing right here. All right, let me read off this. Sociopathic individuals are extremely self-confident, intelligent, charismatic, and persuasive of others as well as themselves. They inspire those around them and create a dysfunctional culture. Often dizzy and disoriented by its success, success is proof of the accuracy of any claim they make. Words and sometimes bizarre ideas become a substitute for reality. They surround themselves by supporters who worship them and believe that they can do no wrong. These loyalists persist even when their world collapses around them. The community admires them. The system of justice seldom pursues them. They have enormous drive and ambition, but few qualms about how they accomplish their objectives. They are focused. They deal with conflicting evidence by selective perception, compartmentalizing, rationalizing, by attacking its credibility, or by demonizing the messenger. Whoa, what's that one right there? Demonizing the messenger. That's the old ad hominem there. Now, they are more likely to develop patterns of thought which allow them to indulge in criminal activity or to disregard the interest of others. they can be very successful entrepreneurs. That's how that second paragraph ended there. And I tell you that, I'd love to find out who wrote that. Let's see, I'll try to find out who wrote that. But that goes right into what I'm saying. So it kind of makes me feel like maybe I got something, you know, this kid was confident enough to harbor my niece as a runaway in her house. Excuse me, charismatic, persuasive to get you to cut your hair off. And my niece probably would have been loyal to her even after that. If she didn't have adults like us around her, like, we got to fix this and set this thing straight. And the community admires them, that sentence. Like, this kid is a popular kid. This kid is admired by the community that she's in within that middle school setting. And justice will seldom pursue them. I mean, what can happen to this kid? There is no punishment for this kid for talking another kid into cutting half her hair off. I mean, what do you do? I mean, really, for the most part, you know what they would do? They would look at my niece and say, "You're dumb for doing that." Like, the blame would get put on her, actually.
Yeah, you blame the victim. That's the easiest way to do it, the easiest way of deflection. And, of course, you know, as an uncle, as a caring family member, you're going to say, well, yeah, she has to take some responsibility for what happened, of course, because it was ultimately her decision. But at the same time, the idea didn't pop out of nowhere. You know, I'm sorry that we raised a kind, compassionate, you know, youngster here, and you're raising what sardines look like, a sociopath. So if you really want to blame the victim, I hope you have some good plans for the future that don't involve your child, because you see the route that, you know, he or she is heading.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Definitely blame the victim, and, you know, and it's two birds with one stone, and you're blaming a black woman for something, you know, making another thing her fault. We can be mad at them again for another generation. That's one thing I look at, that it's 2013, and it's always, oh, we're past this and we're past that. Oh, I just tried to open a link and it did not work. Let's click that again. And I guess we're kind of inadvertently leaning into parenting here. Let me get into an article that's on the book The Sociopath Next Door here, real quick, by Davia Tamin. Now she talks about, one out of every 25 people has no conscience or sense of right or wrong. What do you do when you work with one, all right, in the workplace? Evil in the office. If you think about it, you'll probably realize you've seen it play out at least once in your career. All of a sudden, a well-running, friendly, effective group or company begins to disintegrate for no apparent reason. Now, people start to become demoralized and dysfunctional. That word comes back. Efficiency plummets, client services and sales suffer, and convoluted mistakes are made up to, they are made up to and including illegal behavior such as fraud and larceny. Employees begin to develop a psychosomatic illness. A sick time rises, and the best talent starts to leave. Now, what used to be a great work situation, it turns into a nightmare. Now, more often than not, this dysfunction can be traced to the entry of one new employee, perhaps the boss, his or his assistant, the head of HR, or a new shop steward. And when you start to explore, you find that though the person may look and act apparently normal, even charming, and those around him or her are suffering. Now, 4% of the global population is made up of sociopaths. Dr. Martha Stout, a psychologist and clinical instructor in psychiatry in the Harvard Medical School, tells us in her book, The Sociopath Next Door. Now, that means one out of every 25 human beings has no conscience, no sense of right or wrong, no empathy, no ability to understand emotion. And now she says no soul. I'm going to excuse that. I still believe this is a smart woman that knows what she's talking about, even though there's no such thing as a soul. Nobody has one of those. Now, while they can mimic emotion, they see other humans as mere pawns or saps to be used for their benefit, amusement, or both. Jeez Christ, benefit, amusement, or both. Now, add that to the fact that science now is questioning whether there is any difference at all between sociopaths and psychopaths, and that those with a narcissistic personality disorder also have some of the same characteristics, an inability to care about anyone but themselves, and it means that evil is all around us, even in work. Sociopaths lie with impunity. They cast blame where it does not belong. They humiliate and berate or their direct reports or colleagues. They set up coworkers. They betray confidences, and they undercut good work because it is a threat to them. Geez, that's kind of like mixing the sociopathy with the Dunning-Kruger, you know, I suck ass at my job, so I'm just gonna try to screw your job up so that I don't look so bad. Now, some start life by killing small animals, while others are not that obvious. Regardless, they progress to more mayhem as they go. And while some go on to be full-fledged serial killers or Bernie Madoffs, and some others, they channel their efforts closer to home or the workplace. Picture a new boss who comes in to head the sales department of a high-tech company. At first, he seems to be a good, true, an attractive, well-spoken, suave person, right? Says all the right things, makes all the right promises, going to the next page. But then things start to go off a bit. He starts blaming and humiliating individuals in public for mistakes they claim they did not make. He may target one or two individuals or start playing team members against one another. Talk starts to turn sarcastic and hurtful. Jokes become nasty, profane. They become mean-spirited. Tempers begin to flare. Shouting becomes more acceptable. Rumors and gossip, they flourish where little had existed before. Now, did you know that X has a drinking problem? Did you know that Y is leaving his wife? Did you know that XY is really having a homosexual affair? Just rumors. Inappropriate behavior in the workplace, folks. Now, people are rarely praised, and if they are, it is hollow. Client requests and the needs to start, they become flagrantly ignored, and so it goes. It's a good article. It goes on for two more pages. I'm actually going to go ahead and post this on the barbershop page on Facebook here. Now, Alfred, you seen this business in the workplace? I know I have.
Oh, yes, of course. And as soon as you started talking about it, I was thinking back to when I worked at Home Depot, and I was like, oh, man, that sounds so familiar. You feel those gears start to turn. You're like, oh, man, I really wonder if it's such and such.
Yeah. And it's that behavior, you know, and I've been with the same company for going on 9 years here this summer, and yeah, I've seen some mean attacks, like one on my sister where she was on a 3-day weekend, and somebody that worked beneath her didn't do his job right while she wasn't there, and somebody that worked above her got her blamed for it and suspended without pay. And one reason, now this person that got her blamed, something that she's been trying to do is she's been trying to get promoted up to run area so she can, you know, more so than just work around Orange County, she'll be working more around the state of Florida, you know, be one of the big dogs. And my sister's not the only person that she's done this to. You know, like she like somebody who's actually already promoted up into that area, she tries to sabotage him, and it's like, wow, like we're dealing with a sociopath here, and it's like I'm wondering when somebody's gonna jump out and start saying that it's rude to call people sociopaths. because it's so true and so constant. You see it in our species. And you know how it says the numbers are so small, you know, one in every 25 people. So, I mean, you got a group of 50 people, you only have two of them. But keep in mind how I described it in my monologue and how these writers are describing it in their articles, that the sociopath is popular, they are smooth, they are cool, they actually seem like an awesome person, so everybody always knows who they are. But those, you know, people that are paying attention and they're, you know, seeking this information and want to think outside the box, we look at them and we're like, well, goddammit, that's a sociopath right there. That's a sick bastard, you know? Like, you know, something that I'll say, the only thing wrong with all politicians is that they want to be politicians. You know, they want that prestige. They, you know, people just want to get to the top of the darn anthill when they, you know, like a lightning bolt is going to hit it one day. Now for
yeah, sorry, I had to keep my mic on mute. My son is over here knocking on the door to wait for it to open.
Oh.
Well, it's really interesting you said, you know, that they are the most popular people, because it's something anytime you hear or watch any of those what is it, like Law and Order or any of those crime TV shows, all the neighbors and the families. Oh, I never think such and such would do this. They're so well liked. Oh, I never think such and such that would happen. They're always so surprised. But it's like, well, anytime you hear of any other type of, you know, killer that has somebody's body in their freezer chopped up for months, you know, no one ever knows about it because they are good at what they do. They know how to work the system. They know how to work people's emotions. And that is what they excel at. But it's interesting that when I was studying psychology, you know, something was brought up is how do you integrate people like that into society? At some point, they do take responsibility for who and what they are. But how does one get help, and how would they see that? How would they see that it is a problem if they cannot grasp what they do is exactly evil? If you know, if you don't have a concept of good and evil, you just have a concept of I guess of self. Because a lot of and I'm looking at that article too, actually, that the antisocial personality disorders and the diagnostic criteria, it's very selfish, very, you know, grandiose sense of self-worth, you know, pathological lying, cunning, manipulative. These are all self-serving qualities. So that begins to, you know, that presents a question, you know, all these people, solipsists, you know, they have some sense of solipsism where it's extreme egoism. It's, I actually did a paper on it a couple years back, and it's very interesting. If someone could be to the most extreme solipsist, that they believe that their mind is the only thing that actually exists in everything and every person, every scenario that they interact, is actually a figment of their own imagination. That's quite a possibility. How do you include people like that into society, and how do you bring them and show them that what they're perceiving is real and what is fantasy? And that brings so many possibilities.
Man, and that's the thing. Yeah, how do you get them to function in a group without that person harming someone or several or many people in that group? And I don't know how you would do it, but it always makes me go back to those two building blocks that I think could build our species toward what we call and what we perceive as morality. And that is always going to be empathy and altruism. Those two blocks, I think, are the best for the foundation. That empathy, keep putting yourself in the other person's shoes before you treat them however you're going to treat them, before you interact with them. Consider yourself as that person. And always be ready to, I mean, sharing and caring, man. This is kindergarten education, folks. And we somehow forget about it as soon as we get into first grade. Sharing and caring, man. Like, as I said before, if you have 1,000 sandwiches, most likely 800 of them you are not going to use while 30 other people all have only half a sandwich, and that's what they're supposed to use to get through with the week. Empathy and altruism. Picture yourself with half a sandwich and share around those 800 sandwiches that are just going to get moldy and go to waste anyway. Now, how do you get it into that person's head? And I think the big failure that we made too long ago, and I wouldn't know how our species would go about fixing it, is when we invented our precious money and we made our special little invention of economy that we really messed up with making it unlimited how much one individual can have. There really should have been put a cap on how much money one person can acquire because, you know, as we said, it is a resource. If you can buy water with it, then it kind of is water. And if one guy can just buy all the water and then just sit on it and say, to hell with the rest of you, go ahead and go drink from a swamp or something, we've made an error, you know. And wouldn't it be hilarious if the way our species functions, when you look back at those Milgram experiments, if that guy would be celebrated for buying all the water because he did something really cool and eccentric. Because our species is goofy like that, and it would not surprise me. Look into another link that Kim sent me here. An antisocial personality disorder. I dig down here on this wiki one. All right, now you guys ready to hear me say some words that I might mispronounce? Now we're looking at causes of pathophysiology, hormones and neurotransmitters. Now, antisocial personality disorder is said to be genetically based, but typically has environmental factors, such as family relations, that trigger its onset. Traumatic events can lead to a disruption of the standard development of the central nervous system, which can generate a release of hormones that can change personal patterns of development. One of the neurotransmitters that have been discussed in individuals with ASPD is serotonin. A recent meta-analysis of 20 studies showed a correlation between ASPD and serotonin metabolic 5-hydroxynolecysteide acid. Ooh, that's tough, man. 5-HIAA, they put in parentheses for me. The study found a reasonable effect size of the 5-HIAA levels in antisocial groups and were a 0.45 standard deviation lower in non-antisocial groups. All right, so what they're digging into here is they found that this serotonin, this metabolic 5-hydroxynolecysteide acid, it was found in higher levels in antisocial groups and lower in the non-antisocial groups. Now, let's move forward. A J.F.W. Deacon of the University of Manchester's Neuroscience and Psychiatry Unit has discussed additional evidence of 5-HT's, they broke it down even more, 5-HT's connection with antisocial personality disorder. Now, Deacon, he suggests that the low cerebral spinal fluid concentrations of 5-H, can they just find one way that they want to write it, can contain concentrations of 5-HIAA and hormone responses to 5-HT. And this has been displayed with two main ascending 5-HT pathways that mediate adaptive responses to post and current conditions. These fluids are the ones kicking off. Well, I'm assuming what they're saying here is while you're developing as a human being. So I guess earlier in this article in the first paragraph, part of your environment and what's coming in or a traumatic event. So like maybe a traumatic event for me, like my house burning down when I was 10 years old. That's probably why I'm always, I smell something, I got to run around the house and go check things, you know. I've been affected, you know, so, all right, let's move.
For a second, man, I think somebody in chat says there's no sound. I think it's, gender equality says there's no sound.
Oh, I'm not even on the chat room. We're getting no audio? Uh-oh. I got to worry about that. Hello, testing, testing. What are they saying now? Testing.
No, you're fine. What they need to do is press F5.
Oh, refresh. Oh, yeah, you probably. I tell you, hey, man, the internet has a lot of flash on it these days. Yeah, that Adobe Flash will shut the game down on you. It makes this computer freeze, and it makes my old computer just quit working and want to collect unemployment. All right, now let's see here. Ooh, this is a tough one, guys. Now I am pronouncing these words the best I can. Now it says, while it has been shown that lower levels of serotonin may be associated with ASPD, there has also been evidence that decreased serotonin function is highly correlated with impulsiveness and aggression across a number of different experimental paradigms. Impulsivity is not only linked with irregularities of 5-HT metabolism, but may be the most essential psychopathological aspect linked with such dysfunction. Now, in a study looking at the relationship between the combined effects of central serotonin activity and acute testosterone levels in human aggression, researchers found that aggression was significantly higher in subjects with the combination of high testosterone and high cortisol responses. Now, correspondingly, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders classifies that impulsiveness or failure to plan ahead and irritability and aggressiveness as two of the seven criteria in diagnosing someone with ASPD. Now, some studies have found a relationship between monoamine oxidase A, OXIDASE, folks, and antisocial behavior, including conduct disorder and symptoms of adult ASPD in maltreated children. Ah, geez. So yeah, and that one, that is a antisocial personality disorder when I keep saying ASPD. And so yeah, so there is science into this stuff, folks. Like, yeah, you know, and remind you, this is a free thinker show, and we tend to be the kind of folks that think that you can't pray it away. You can have science and dig into it, and you can have professionals, all right, because our species is kind of smart, and we can figure these things out, gang. We really can. All right, now we're going into this. I'm looking at 8:53 on my clock. Let me remind you, it's 310-982-4273 to get through if you want to call in there. And this is a Black Freethinker show. This is the barbershop that you're in. And, I wanted to choose this subject. I really wanted to dig into sociopathy, and it's ironic. I chose this subject, like, well, what was it, like, just a few hours after we did the last show, and then these things happen that kind of add in where I can just kind of build that into the narrative. I guess we kind of dug into parenting. Alfred, did you want to dig into parenting a little bit more?
Yeah, actually, I returned to Yo Gabba Gabba down, speaking of which. But, really, it's one thing to help raise kids. And, you know, of course, I thought, well, you know, I raised my three little brothers who the closest one is probably 4 years difference between he and I. And then the other two are 2 years off of him. So it's a pretty significant gap, but for the most part, I helped raise my little brothers, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, I helped raise them for all their lives. This parenting thing shouldn't be too hard, but let me tell you, it's one thing to watch your kid, so watch somebody's kids, you know, when they go out at night, but there's one thing when you have that kid 24/7, it is completely different, and that's why it kind of bothers me to see, you know, so many young parents is like, well, I think I got married maybe a little too young, and I might have had my son just a little too young. I mean, for 20, 24, that's still pretty good in most cases. But the issue comes when you want to protect the child, you want to teach them, and how you do that is going to be a reflection of how you were raised. And if you have issues with how you were raised, then you're like, well, fuck, I want to try and prevent, you know, my son or daughter from going down that path, or I'm not going to raise them like that. But then you also have to worry about overcompensating. You don't want to be a strict parent, but then you got to worry about being a parent that's too lax. It's so many little odds and ends, and you just get so frustrated with it, and you just say, fuck it, they're going to be a clone of me, because they're going to see what I they're going to see what I see, they're going to do what I do, and I hope I can teach them better to try and be better the person than me, but in the end, they're going to do whatever the hell they want to do. But it's just giving them an avenue to express themselves and giving them options rather than ultimatums seems to be the way that I personally would want to go. But I was, I'm a proponent of corporal punishment in the home. Not too many people are still fans of that. But like I told my wife even before my son was born, is that, you know, I grew up, and I'm pretty sure, Kane, you can attest to this too, is that, you know, you grew up, you did something wrong. You got the belt, you got the switch, you got something thrown at you, you got Jedi mind tricks, anything that your parents could produce and was a projectile that was used. But you really want to move away from that because it's not that productive in the long run, because eventually you get to where I was, and that I towered over my mother, you know, at 16 years old, and I was probably almost three times her size. So, you know, throwing stuff and hits and all this other kind of stuff really didn't work on me, because she could not produce enough force in order to do harm to me. So my mother's creative, though. I give her that. Anything I ever say about my mother, she's very creative. She found something that I feared more than the belt, which was taking away my money. And I sorely missed that. I begged for ass whoopings. I did not want her to take my little JCPenney's money. So that it kind of inspired me to be just as creative while my son is, well, I guess once he reached the age of four, when he's actually able to understand some of the results of his actions, to actually have the punishment fit the crime. If you see some of these parents that they have kids that steal something, the kid holds a sign up in traffic, says, I'm a thief, you know, here's where I'll be if I continue stealing. I think things like that are creative. They are really creative, and you're not physically harming a child. You're humiliating them. You're definitely showing them what will happen if they don't behave, and they'll get a taste of what will happen in the future if they continue that action. It is really, really creative. But it's so strange. All these other parents are coming and saying, because I went and read some of the comments back when this was really popular a few years ago, that, oh, this is child abuse, this is all humiliation, you know, just to call Child Protective Services. And I'm like, well, the parents didn't beat the crap out of them. The child's not harmed. The worst a child's going to have is a sore ego at the end of the day. So I'm wondering what these people, if they have children, one, and if they do have children, what are they doing to discipline their children? Because you can't have a child and not have them grow up without discipline, because we have all seen the result of people without discipline. And that's one of my big pet peeves, especially growing up in school, and seeing all these, especially a lot of our fellow African Americans who choose to act out, and they just want to represent what the worst stereotypes possible. They have no discipline, and you end up missing out on your education because they can't behave because their parents refuse to, or just too lazy to teach them proper manners, and that the world does not revolve around them. So I dedicated myself to say my child is going to be educated, a lot smarter than me. He's going to be disciplined, if nothing else. He could go and take over a third world country, but he will be the most admirable, the most adamant that, you know, he will be someone worthy of emulation if he's going to do that. So, all in all, I've had to kind of struggle and fight with myself and kind of tweak what I personally believe in and tweak what will work to kind of fit the mold and the model that my wife and I kind of talked about. With her, it's not so much of a big deal because she has full confidence in her ability to raise my son. But now, me, on the other hand, I have doubts. I have a lot of doubts because I don't want him picking up my bad habits. So I actually went on the Magic Sandwich show, maybe probably 6 to 8 months ago, and I asked Aaron Raw about his secular parenting because he has two boys. And what he really said kind of struck a nerve with me because I was expecting him to say, you know, he had a vast array of, you know, secular knowledge, you know, to kind of replace all the religious. But, you know, he said he gave him a choice. He said, here's what, you know, your parents believe in. You know, here's what I believe in. Here's what your mom believes in. Here's what a lot of people believe in. Here's how we feel about that. You choose what you want to do. And just having that freedom, that option, I think makes us a superior parent, and I will make this dichotomy. And someone can debate me on this all day long. But secular parents, parents in the free thought community will definitely produce better children. When I say better, I mean more socially adjusted human beings for our society to progress than religious will. You're teaching them to accept others for who they are. You're giving them moral boundaries, but letting them know that morality has changed over generations and that your morality may change as you grow and that you should always question your own beliefs and the beliefs of others because in the end of the day, they're just unfounded and a lot of them are unfounded and lack any evidence or fact. And that's something that rang true with me, especially growing up. But if I can reinforce that into a child as, you know, as young as I can, then he will grow and see as he gets older how the world works without becoming too jaded, I guess, and not experience too many traumatic events that kind of thwart his social growth toward anything that I guess would be somewhat sociopathic. I can at least hope so. But yeah, I just wanted to throw in my little piece in there of parenting. But you know, we could talk for days and days about theories on parenting, but at the end of the day, they're going to be autonomous. That's one thing I desired strongly ever since I gained some sentience from my own mother, was that I am an autonomous being, and at the end of the day, I might do exactly what you taught me not to do, just to show you how autonomous I am.
Now, with me, I wouldn't be surprised if you had one of these scientists who's, you know, their job is so fancy I can't even pronounce it. If you had them analyze me and find out that I've got some chemical in me that keeps me calm and kind of, you know, it makes me a bit of a relaxed individual. But my biological mother, she expired mortally before she was able to finish raising me, so I went into foster care system. But while she was alive and healthy, we were on timeouts. We were on a serious timeout system. No belts, no slaps, no hits, no wire hangers. Just go sit in the corner, and she set the timer for an hour or maybe 30 minutes, depending on the offense. And these were offenses on I didn't do things like break windows or get into fights or jump fences. My mistake would probably be something like leaving the remote on the floor instead of on the coffee table. Go sit in the corner for 30 minutes. Think about, you know, being focused and, you know, taking things seriously. So the timeouts, they worked for me. And what I'm pushing now, because, you know, after the incident yesterday, my brother-in-law and my sister are asking me, like, what do I think? And a lot of it, I think, is a lot of language and context with things. Like one thing, they bought her a tablet for Christmas. And for me, I wouldn't give a kid a tablet and say, this is your tablet. I would get a tablet and, relegate it to a specific room in the house or a specific area of the house and say, you have access to this tablet as you are a resident in this house and a member of this family. You have access to this item to use it if you need to use it, but not to say this is your item. Same thing with chores. I wouldn't say this is your chore or this is your job to do. No, this is just something that people do. Washing dishes is not a chore for a specific person. It's just a part of domestic functioning. It's just something you do because it needs to be done. Is how I would push it. And also activities. You know, there's a lot of going to the beach, going to the restaurant, going shopping, you know, doing something exciting. You know, like take a day to go to the library. You know, take the whole day. Make it bigger than that. Cause, and you can also show the financial responsibility and get the kid involved, all right? Kids, they really appreciate involvement. You know, so this day, you're going to go to the library, right? So what else are you going to need? You're going to be out for a few hours? Make a sandwich. Cut up some fruit. Wash some fruit. Bag that stuff up. Take it out with you. Now you don't have to stop at the McDonald's and waste money on something that's going to come right out the other end within an hour. You don't need to do that. And it also shows the kid. The kid gets into the process, you know, carefully cutting the fruit, learning how to use the knife without harming themselves. And then go to the library, and don't just let them run loose and go pick out books. Know what your kid's hobbies and interests are, and show them how to use that Dewey Decimal System and find books specifically to that. And then go out somewhere, and you take a book you checked out and a book the child checked out and read chapters to each other. Interact, because a kid is not just a kid. That is a very short, temporary part of a human's existence, especially with what we can do medically now. We can be 190 and 80 years old. We can be so old that being a kid is a short time. So you're really just preparing them to be an adult. So what you really have is a small person. You have a small, young, Homo erectus human being, Homo sapien. And you just want to get the information and the indoctrination in there that will make them a productive adult. In a very few short years, and that adulthood is going to drag out for several decades and maybe a century once we learn how to make hearts out of hemp. You know, like so. That's me on the parenting there, but even though I refuse to breed, and I'm not sure if I'm going to adopt in my 40s, I might. And overrated, underrated. Overrated. Men crying. I know, sounds like straight up Bundyism. I should be watching Married with Children with a no ma'am shirt on, but I do think men crying is overrated. And it's ironic because it really is male privilege and our general bravado that makes the crying overrated, John Boehner. And I think that this can also be used for manipulation, you know, bringing back the phrase from a previous discussion, emotional blackmail, you know, because just as well as one can cry, one can also fake cry. You know, so I think we over-celebrate it when we see an adult man crying. We go way over the top. Oh, he's crying like he could be faking it. And it's really not that amazing of a thing that happens. Like, I might not cry when I see a puppy get hit by a car, but if you slice off my index finger, yeah, I'm probably going to shed a few. You know, like, men crying is not some amazing thing when you're crying over a school shooting while you're saying that, while you're writing up a new narrative on why drone strikes are awesome. You know, so yeah, men crying, overrated and underrated. Human beings, if you've heard me before on any shows or seen me write anything, I'm always so disappointed in human beings. I see news articles and there'll be so many responses, and my only ones will be like, my species is broken, you know. But really, for me as an individual, I underrate human beings, and because we really are a really cool mammal. We're so cool. Like, we invent extensions to our own ability. We add shoes to our feet so we can handle more different types of terrain. We can exchange these shoes for flippers and go swim fast and well. If we can't see well, like me, we made glasses. And we made telescopes to see far and microscopes to see up close. We get sick, and we actively combat that sickness with more than just the white blood cells we already have, but with medicines and treatments that we developed over generations. And as a species, we generally decided that if we want to live longer, we just will. So for me, and how I'm always complaining, human beings are really underrated, Alfred. Oh, Alfred, you on the line?
Yeah, I had to find my mute button.
Oh.
That was kind of... I had to really think about what I was going to consider to be overrated. And when I thought about it, I saw an article a few weeks ago about something about, I think, black culture. The people readily identify on top of that list, soul food. And I'm like, I couldn't understand it, because it's like, well, people make a big deal about it, but you're getting the same thing every night that is actively going to kill you. I can speak from personal experience. All the salt that I have ingested over the last 25 years, somebody probably shouldn't have ingested in their entire lifetime. And that's just with the seasoning Tony's Asheries. And it probably has 500 times the amount of sodium that you should intake a day. But I still love it. I put it on ice cream. But anyway, I'm getting off the subject. Just soul food in general. It's probably one of the most unhealthiest things you could eat in your life. But we celebrate it like it is the newest thing that's going to help us toward social progress and world peace. But it's really not. We could take a lesson from other cultures and really try to eat healthier. I mean, I understand where soul food came from, and that's sad. When you think about it, that we're continuing that tradition. But at some point, we have to take responsibility and cut off some of the ham hocks, the collard greens, and fried chicken, and the so good, just delicious macaroni and cheese. Make myself even more hungry. But it's really, really overrated. And what's sad is the underrated, what's really underrated in our society and as in our culture, is health and fitness. We put so much stock into how people, how folks look. And some people don't put too much stock in their own career, but really don't put too much stock into how healthy they are. If they're not on their deathbed, then they're fine. That is a mentality. But just taking care of yourself in general fitness, it's really a side note. It's like, you know, you're not going to get an oil change until your car starts rattling or something. And it's sad that we're like that. It just becomes so lax in our society that, you know, you have to actually go and actively try and find some of these new diets to try out. And one of the most simplest diets, the most effective diet that I am currently doing right now is called intermittent fasting, and it comes down to just stop fucking eating. I mean, that's a cruel way of saying it, but it's, at the end of the day, you only need so many calories per day, and the type of food that we have in America, you'll get the amount of calories you need in one serving, just in the morning. I personally eat from 1600 to 1700. Well, I try to eat typically around 5 o'clock, and I only need 2200 calories for my body to operate function per day for 24 hours. After that, I'm burning calories because I'm not eating anything. I have excess fat on my body that I would like to get rid of, so my body is burning it. And to make sure that I'm getting the proper nutrition, I will supplement this a little bit earlier than my eating window with handy thing, men's all fitness something. I don't know. I found it in GNC, and it's a multivitamin. It gives you all the vitamins you need as an adult per day, and it tastes like vanilla bean, and it's a shake, and that works for me. So that's my take on underrated and overrated in our society as a whole.
Yes. Yeah, and I'd also add in on soul food. It's not just the food that's overrated. The movie is overrated, and a cartoon called The Boondocks completely decimated it. Just destroyed that movie. Said they went right back to eat the same food that killed Big Mama. Fucking destroyed it. And I tell you what, with diet now, with me, I just kind of stick to some basic fundamentals. You know, I got my fruit that I get my fiber and my little vitamin C from. I get my protein so I can build onto my triceps and pecs. Yeah, I'm vain, full of vanity. Shit, yeah. And I also get my breads and starches for when I know that, like, over the next 20 hours, I'm going to need a lot of energy. Those things, they build you up well, that bowl of spaghetti. You know, that stuff will build you in good. And my cruciferous vegetables, I make sure I get those in. And I'd say if you're not really on a diet like that, I would say don't just go and jump on a diet. You know, like, don't just completely change your whole eating all the way over. Like, I don't think I could have done that in 2007 when I started changing it up a little bit. Because I would just relapse and just start slamming whole extra large pieces down my face like I was before. You know, I was wearing a 36 waist pants in men's. You know, that's a heavy, heavy pair of pants, and I was wearing them without a belt. You know, I was beefy, man. I was beefy, and if you're gonna switch it up, add in like healthier things that you like. Like I don't think I've ever come across a fellow human being that hates broccoli, even though we know the first George Bush banned it from the White House. But I don't know many people that hate broccoli or hate cauliflower. So if you're not really getting that in, next time you're in the grocery store, add that in. Begin mixing things into your diet. You know, and you know, maybe like two weeks down the line, go ahead. Order that pizza, order it with a 2-liter, and then have that day, and then the next morning get back on your broccoli, and then add in, like, what fruits do you like? Don't look at there's a gazillion diet websites and diet podcasts and videos, and, you know, if one of them had it down perfect, then that would be the only one that existed. But there's reasons why there's thousands, because there's precious money to be made off of it, and no one is exactly correct. What fruits work for you? Like, for me, I get my pears. I really like my pears. That's my good source of fiber. I don't really like strawberries, but I know that they're useful. Blackberries, I like them, and I like to get them by the case. You know, like, pick the one that's yours. If your thing is plums, go with your plums. Don't try to rush and get what somebody else said get. And I really like my pears, man. I would recommend DeAnjou if anybody there is interested in going out getting pears. Get those DeAnjou pears. They're darn tasty. You leave them out for about 12 hours, and they'll ripen right there on the counter. Get some good bites in. Or a Bosque pears if you like a sweeter pear, or Bartlett pears for a bit of a more tart pear, or you could just go with straight up apples if you want apples. But I really like my pears. But don't just rush and flip the whole diet over to what some trendy website says. Add in, and then just you could slowly replace or just or minimize the things that aren't that useful. Like I said, I really used to just slam pizzas down my face. Like, a day off of work, I knew the pizza place opened at 10:30, and at 10:29 I was ready on the phone, and that was like brunch. And then going into dinner, I would just order from the exact same pizza place again. This is what I was doing, and I had to slowly start to weave in turkey and drinking more water and less soda pop. You know, like, and you could do it, and you can just do it slow. Don't jump in like, oh, it's my New Year's resolution and I'm going hard. No, that's a no-go. You're setting yourself up for a relapse, folks. No, I got to tell you, we didn't leave much time for open floor. Is there anything you got for open floor, Alfred?
Yeah, we can have open floor if we have anybody who wants to call in and chat. Cause I got Gender Equality in the chat here is talking about the merit system that I'm interested in hearing about. I actually copy and pasted some excerpts that while he was describing it and sent it to my wife on Facebook so she can look over it. But I heard of a merit system like that. I'm talking about parenting, by the way. But I've never actually known anybody that to institute it into their into their family. I just either heard of, you know, timeouts or, you know, you just get the dog shit beat out of you.
I was on those timeouts, and like I said, it would be for something like leaving the remote control on the floor, because I just I wouldn't say that I was some great kid, but I was just obedient. I felt like the adults knew what they were talking about, and I thought they had some pretty good ideas, so I would just run with that. You know, like I never really caused a big fuss or made a big stink about a lot of things. And I actually, as far as getting grounded goes, I've only been grounded one time for 1 week because I forgot to call while I was at at another kid's house. And I think that's how I would function. Not a whole lot of not a lot of punishment. I would just I would go for instilling personal discipline into the child. You know, like as I said, you know, making the chores not chores, but just something that you do because that's what you're supposed to do. I want to dig into this news article before I close, because this is a funny one that it's starting to pick up a little bit of steam. It's the I do not have to add any punchlines to this, folks. The article is ridiculous itself. Just the title: pastor claims his penis had been anointed with the Holy Spirit, divine semen. All right, I'm not adding anything in or taking anything out. Nope. So Sabrino Valdici Picanto, 59 years old, was arrested for raping several women attending his church. He gave as an excuse that his penis had been consecrated with divine semen of the Holy Spirit. A 23-year-old young woman who prefers to remain anonymous said, "He has convinced us that only God could come into our lives through the mouth. Often after worship, the pastor would take us would take us some of the funds back from the church and ask us to do oral sex on him until the Holy Spirit comes through ejaculation. He came to abuse some elderly and defends himself by saying that he had an encounter with Jesus in a brothel and gave him the mission of spreading the sacred semen throughout the state, beginning with the faithful, and of which he is responsible. Now, according to the pastor, and this is a quote from him, you have in your hands the servant of the Lord and do not regret it yet. I hope to continue my wonderful job within prison." Yowza! Now, Denise Epinero, a delegate of the region, said that he was caught red-handed while rubbing his penis in the face of a local merchant, which he promised to make more sales in her business due to the divine liquid. When we asked, he offered no resistance and even asked if I wanted to be part of the kingdom of heaven on the way to the police station. He is not ashamed of such acts and thinks that this is the normal thing of the world. He posted bail and was released. I added nothing to that. That is the article, folks, really.
Yeah, I tell my wife my penis is magical all the time.
My penis is consecrated with the sacred semen. Like, this guy just really, like, he took, like, a joke that, like, some 14-year-old boys would make and just made that his sex life. I tell you, human beings are funny. Right after I say that human beings are underrated, oh man, this guy comes in. Yeah, I tell you that's that thing, and he used them with religion, you know, and he said it himself. He said he wants to start with the faithful, and like clearly, like most of the guys that are using the religion for sex, these are just guys that want to get laid. They're just human beings with a libido, and they want to have sex because nature said you have an erection, you want to do this. But they, you know, this culture, this social construct, this religion that makes people so confused about sex and tries to make you ashamed of sex and makes sex some weird foreign thing, as if that's just not how mammals reproduce. It can drive you into that. And it's like, really, this guy could just be hanging out at a bar and talking like a normal person and having a normal dating life, but instead he's this sort of insidious, egregious little creep sneaking around the churches, rubbing his penis on the faces of merchants so they can boost their sales with the divine liquid. It's like, let that silly religion go and, you know, just be normal. And I know somebody religious would take that as an insult, and it's like, hey, it's some wacky stuff, and it can be used pretty darn dirty. Uh-oh. Yeah, are we closing out here? I guess it's 9:25. We got a few minutes left. I guess I'll say, yeah, again, this is brought to you by Black Freethinkers, and Kim posts a lot of information on the Black Freethinkers page. There is a Black Freethinkers website with an online newspaper, and you get global news on this thing. I have it bookmarked on my PC. I get up in the morning, and I'm like, what's going on the planet? You know, like and you get it firsthand immediately. Every 24 hours, this thing updates quick and fast. Every Sunday, you get a Black Freethinker show. Every other Saturday, you get Raina with Reason, Science, and Skepticism. Keep your dictionary open. Raina knows way too many words, all right? The Mario show. The Super Mario show, Mario and Emmeline. Every other Friday, you're going to get that. And then 2 weeks down the line, your hair is going to grow, and you're going to have to bring your ass back to the barber shop. And I swear it to you, the next one, we won't be so serious and doom and gloom. We're going to bring a little bit more humor and happy to you. We really will. We don't want the barber shop to just be the goddamn angry place. All right, we're going to have a good time here. Alfred?
Yeah, man, I really enjoyed doing the show. I almost didn't make it. I had a late call at work, but I really did enjoy it. I almost forgot about that last article about the guy's magical semen, and I'm like, there's just some people in this world where you could tell them anything and they will believe it, and that guy just so happens to meet those people because that is some crazy shit.
Yeah, and he went, the fact that you're bold enough to say those words out loud, like, that's, like, I couldn't say the words, like, I mean, as an adult, I have, you know, I'm too empathetic, and I'm, you know what, I'll just say it, I'm a decent human being, and I wouldn't do that, but, like, if I was, like, a 12-year-old boy with that wild virgin little boy libido, I'd probably make up a goddamn lie like that, but how do you go up to someone and say that and expect them to take you seriously? There is a level of insane, and that man is it. And you know what? He said he's going to carry it out in prison. And, Kim, could you carry us out with the theme music? Boom, 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 boom.